Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back. It's your weekly podcast. Where else would you be? Or where are you listening to us? People still are not quite telling us where they're listening to us yet. I am fascinated by that. Providing it's clean. Don't go mucky on me. It'll get weird. At that point, it seems odd to bring anybody in, but I'm going to have to. Ryan Champion, hello.
Hello.
Hello. Jack Bennion, hello.
How are we doing?
We're doing everyone and making sure no one's doing us, Jack. But losing as ever. So, if you're a regular listener to the programme, you'll know at this point we blast through the headlines of the Bible, as we've referred it to on a quite regular basis. The most sport news, which Jack Bennion is the National Motor Sport Editor of. Is that the correct title, Jack? I don't know.
National Rally Editor.
National Rally Editor. You see, your job title changed to me over the weekend, and I'll explain to our listeners and to Ryan why at this point, because Jack was on the recce with Rhys Yates and with Tom Woodburn, so he wanted to go and experience a recce. Now, when you see three boys wearing the amount of hair product that was obviously being carried in that car, it was genuinely the worst looking boy band from a hair product point of view that I think I've seen on a recce ever. So well done, Jack. You managed to nail that.
Thanks very much, Tony. Some of us actually got a decent length of hair, so we have to use it, you know.
Absolutely. Hey, listen, I'm very envious of you. I'm very envious of it. I am losing my hair now, but that comes with age and wisdom, and unfortunately landing on my head quite a lot. But hey ho, there you go. So we will come back to the British Rally Championship. I want to go through some of the headlines that your paper's been putting out, or will be putting out tomorrow, Jack. Volkswagen safe in the WRC until 2019. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's really nice to see Volkswagen stay in, and obviously with the emission scandal and them dropping cars in things like Le Mans, a lot of us have been quite worried. I mean, the official word from Volkswagen's always been that they'll be staying until 2019, but it's really nice to have this confirmed with the new board, because the old deal, which was meant to go till 2019, was with the old board. So to have this approved by the new board who've come in after the emissions scandal just sort of shores everything up a little bit, I think.
Right. Were you shocked by them putting this out now, or is it kind of expected? Because obviously there's been a motor show recently, as Jack just alluded to there. There's some new board members and things like that. Were you surprised?
I don't know if I was surprised, but it's nice to get that reassurance that they are staying around the World Championship, isn't it? Because without a statement, obviously you don't know what's happening, and there's always a question in the back of people's minds, particularly with Jos Capito leaving the team. But they've openly said recently that Formula One isn't on the Volkswagen Group agenda. So they're obviously fairly stable in sports car racing with Audi and with Porsche, and great that they're looking to continue in WRC with Volkswagen. They said they wanted to dominate the championship over a number of years. Well, they're well on the way to doing that, but it's great to have that rubber stamp that they're going to be around for a while and compete against Toyota as another big manufacturer when they come back.
In the story, it does allude to obviously what's gone on with regards to the emissions and things like that. Now, it would be unfair of me to name the source, but I actually heard a story that the emissions scandal did have a knock-on effect to a possible programme for Petter Solberg.
Well, tell us more.
That is about as much as I know. There was potentially a deal in place for Petter to run a polo himself.
And do you think this involved rallying or just rallycross?
I don't know. That's as much as I know. And it would be unfair of me to say where I heard that. But that was the knock-on effect that I heard that did happen due to the emissions thing. Whether it was rally or whether it was RX, I really, really don't know. But that is certainly what I heard anyway.
And it has had an effect. I mean, they've already canned the third car from both World Endurance programs. So, you know, it has had a knock-on effect, but that's definitely good news for rallying that they're sticking around for a long time.
I think so. Now, we're going to stick with Volkswagen, and we're going to stick with the man that I've been somewhat concerned about. Even Trevor Agnew alluded to his concerns for him. The man who won Rally Mexico, which kind of fell a tiny bit off our radar, but I'm very conscious that I want it on our radar this week. Yari Matti Latvala, you know, a lot can be said from road positions and things like that, but he really did control the rally, didn't he, Ryan?
He did. Was it a surprise? Who did I predict last week? Just remind me. I can't remember.
I think it was me, but I was out doing mid-Wales, so...
I think you said Lavlo, right? I think you did.
Yes, that's what I'm looking for, yes.
See, that hair gag right at the top of the programme is going to stick with... It's run deep, hasn't it, with Jack? I can tell straight away. What are we? We're 3 minutes in and Jack's already ganging up with you. Okay, that's fine.
We knew Latvala would have good road position, but there was also he's look had to change at some point, didn't it? He's a class driver. He's got the speed, he had the road position, he drove brilliantly, you know, he controlled the rally, and it was refreshing to hear in the interviews that he said, I don't have to win every stage, you know, I just want to win the rally, and you know, taking a sensible approach to it, and the result was there for him. So it's great for him, because he needs that confidence, we all know that, and let's hope that you know, that shows then to the next rallies, and he can actually compete with Ogier in a straight fight. He's still going to benefit a little bit from road position over Ogier going into Argentina, for example. So you know, let's hope he can really get back in the fight, and we're not just going to see a one-sided championship.
Jack, you guys went with the headline, the championship is not over. Obviously he had that that's a piece wrote by David Evans. Is that Yari Matti trying to convince us or himself, do you think?
Well, that depends on who you are and your sort of views on that, really. I think we spoke a bit about it last week, and this is not a surprise. Like Rai said, you know, he's had good road position, and we've alluded to, well, we spoke a bit about last week, and I didn't explain very well my ideas about Latvala, but there's never been any doubt that he can win rallies. You know, he's got that pace over a single rally. You know, he can beat Ogier. We've seen this happen, but it's the bigger question is whether he can do it on a more consistent basis, and Ryan alluded to briefly there that he's going to have a better road position for the next rally, and I think Latvala really needs to go on a good run now and put a couple of rallies together in order to really sort of mount a proper championship charge.
Again, I think even I mentioned last week, you know, it only takes two results, doesn't it? You know, for one thing that Sebastien Ogier has probably not had that bad luck that Yari Matti's had, and that bad luck, I suppose you could say, that Chris Meek certainly had on the first two rounds this year. You know, whether he will end up in a situation like that, and that's where you would like to think, out of all the drivers, Yari Matti is the one, because, right, I wouldn't mind just bringing you in on this one. Andreas Mikkelsen just didn't seem a happy... I don't know, it just didn't seem to flow for him, did it, on Mexico?
No, there's no doubting Andreas Mikkelsen's speed, is there? You know, we've seen it already, but what we maybe haven't seen is consistency yet from Mikkelsen. You know, he's very, very, very quick on one rally, and then he drops maybe from the limelight on the next. And I'm sure that's something he's going to want to work hard on, because he is very quick, as we've just said, but he doesn't seem to have found that consistency yet that marks him out as a potential champion.
I, funny enough, I think probably one of his better friends in the championship as well. I was and somebody that we've spoke about quite a bit. We're going to go to Hyundai Corner almost again here. Thierry Neuville, I think, almost falls into that category again. You know, I watched the onboards of Thierry yesterday. That first particular off, I don't know whether you've seen the onboard of it, right? But it just seemed to be lines again. I'm not entirely sure, but you know, consistency again of lines through corners and things like that. I don't know. And obviously the knock on effect that he's happened to Super Rally and then goes off again on Super Rally.
Yeah, they were both relatively similar incidents, weren't they? When they just ran out of road, he was trying to carry an awful lot of speed through the corner, and the corner just wasn't wide enough for him. I hope we're not already seeing Thierry Neuville trying a little bit too hard, but he clearly is under pressure this year. He clearly does need to perform. We know Hayden Padden, albeit Hayden didn't have one of his better weekends, but we know Hayden Padden is a class act, and Thierry Neuville's certainly keen to reassert himself in that team, but just trying too hard certainly isn't something that's going to help him. And two incidents that just looked like he was just pushing that a bit too fast.
Now, one particular element, obviously, of Rally Mexico, which we spoke about when it was first released, and I know you scoffed at this, Ryan Champion, after doing the safari in that gorgeous Tuttle Porsche, was the 50-mile stage, which I was fascinated to see just how the guys looked at stage end, and you know, but apparently it's not going to happen again. Now, I'm a little bit disappointed by that. I don't know about you.
Oh, absolutely, I'm disappointed by it. You know, it's been hyped up for months, you know, that we're going to have this 80-kilometre stage. It's going to be a real challenge. It's going to bring endurance back to the World Championship. It's run, and straight away, oh, we're not doing that again. It's such a shame. You know, let's try and decide what we're doing with this championship. Are we going one way or the other? And, you know, it was good to hear people saying, oh, the brakes went off. I had to manage that. I ran out of back brakes. I ran out of front brakes. I ran out of tyres. Good. That's what we want. You know, we want the challenge. The cream rises to the top in these conditions. And we want these drivers to be challenged. And, I'm definitely sorry that we're not going to see an 80-kilometre stage again next year.
Well, as I say, I was a bit like you when I was seeing some of the Stage M reports. When I watched back the stuff on WRC Live, I was a little bit disappointed as well. I was actually really looking forward to see, because I haven't really got my head around the amount of time they were going to be in the car. Now, I think I haven't got the stage times up in front of me at the moment, but I think it was the fastest time kind of 48, 49 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was somewhere in the region of 49 minutes. And obviously you're at the stage start for 5 minutes before, helmets on, ready to go. So, really, it's an hour in the car, all told. And like I said, I think that certainly adds something to the challenge of the championship.
Jack, I just want to move on. Again, there's a story with regards to, we keep talking about Hyundai Corner, and we could almost be coming back to it. You guys have a little bit of a headline, I suppose, on the bottom left of page 11. Hyundai having issues with the new i20 with suspension issues, and you guys have done something on that.
Yeah, there's a lot of people throughout the rally who are struggling with arms, breaking and bending arms, that sort of thing. Obviously, with the tough terrain and the distances that were being covered over the rally, so I think Hyundai may be just a little bit at a disadvantage because of the fact of having the new car and running it for pretty much the first time proper on gravel. So that they're going to make some improvements to their suspension arms and try and make them a bit stronger, ready for the next round.
What kind of driver damages arms, eh? What kind of driver damages arms, eh? Anyway, Ryan Champion, there's a nice little piece here on Toyota. Just very aptly, we'll come back to you in arms shortly. Tommy Mäkinen, sorry, I'm teasing. We'll come to that in a second. Tommy Mäkinen, with regards to starting, there's been some rumours that perhaps they're a little bit behind schedule. You know, no drivers announced, but I think we alluded to it the other week that they've got a very, very good test team already in place there with Johanninen, who incidentally was at Rally Mexico as well, and is going to be taking on the Reckies now for the remainder of the season. Whether that actually makes any reference to that, perhaps whether you are going to have a full program in the car next year, we really don't know. And I'll speak to Jack about this in a second, because there's a bit of a story, as I say, in MN about that as well. But he's saying he's quite happily. Tommy's actually saying quite happily he will drive the car as well. He could be the first person in the car, and not having that test driver almost isn't the end of the world just yet.
No, I think that's pressure from the outside, isn't it? Looking in and wanting to hear things, wanting to see things. They know what's going on inside the team. They, you know, they've got experienced people in there. Tommy's been around this business a long time. They'll have a plan in place and they'll be working towards it. Just because we don't see cars out and cars testing, that doesn't mean to say that that things aren't going to plan behind the scenes. I hear that that TMG are still involved in the program. Obviously, we know they're doing engine development and they're working alongside Tommy Mäkinen Racing. And I think things will be progressing quite well. As we've said, as you've just alluded to, they've got a strong pick of drivers that can test the car. They don't need to be announcing anything yet. Yes, they would have liked Chris Meek. Yes, they would have obviously announced that. But they're not short of quality drivers to put into this car to get the mileage from it. You know, let's not forget Tommy Mäkinen's not that old himself. He can get himself in the car. They have all the experience, all the people to get this job done. Just because we don't see it from the outside, like I said, I think they'll be well on track.
Jack, I just wanted to bring you in. Obviously, the story that's on page 11 here with regards to the test car. What are you guys hearing with regards to drivers? Is there any rumours, or is it just pretty much what you guys have put in this article?
Yeah, just my point. I've got really that, you know, I think Mäkinen is trying to keep his options open, and I think it's just worth pointing out very quickly that the original test schedule was meant to start in April, so it was then amended to March and has now been put back again to April. So really, he's not actually behind with the testing schedule. It's more that just they thought they could bring it forward and they've not been able to. So I don't think there's anything to panic about in terms of the testing schedule. But yeah, with the drivers. Mäkinen, I think, said something like, "We will see," when we asked him about Hänninen. We've got it in the piece in the paper if you want to have a read. I think he said it's one of the possibilities, if I remember rightly. I haven't got the copy in front of me now, but it was something along those lines. So yeah, Hänninen a possibility, but there's so many drivers out there looking for a manufacturer's seat that, you know, I think Mäkinen will keep it open for as long as possible and try and create a bit of buzz around it as well.
One driver that did have a little bit of buzz about him at the top of the season, which could be starting to maybe tail off a little bit, is, and certainly could be coming under pressure now, you've run a story with regard to Eric Kamali obviously not getting a finish again on Rally Mexico, and Malcolm Wilson's come out and said he needs to finish Argentina.
That's right, yeah. It's, I think the direct quote is, "I've told him I want him to finish in Argentina," or something along those lines. So yeah, it's quite straightforward for Malcolm: finish the next rally. And there's no sort of alluding to what might happen if he doesn't, but it's quite a stern quote. So yeah, he's someone who was really interesting at the start of the year. He's someone who was, you know, maybe a bit older than most young drivers that you would expect to come straight into the championship, and with not very much experience. But I'd like to point out that at one point I think he was quicker than Osberg on the rally on one of the stages, and you know, he is going to take a while to learn in a WRC car. But yeah, for sure, you can't retire with three accidents in a row and continue like that through the year, because it's just not sustainable. But the pace, I think the pace is there personally. That's my opinion. I think there's a lot more to come from him in terms of pace, but whether he can put the consistency together and finish the rallies, that's another question.
Right. You've drove at a far higher level than Jack or I will ever drive. When you're in a situation where somebody comes to you and says, you have to get a certain result or you have to finish the rally respectively, how difficult is that?
Well, we've seen it with Chris Meek, haven't we? You know, is Chris's increased pace this year because he's free to just drive without any pressure? You know, who knows? But one thing, when people are looking at you for results, when people are expecting results from you, when people want finishes, it only heaps pressure on you. And particularly when you're in a position like Camilli, where he's new to the team, he's wanting to show pace. He's not wanting to come in and just plod round at the bottom end of the top 10. No driver wants to do that. You know, even if he's been told to do that, he still wants to show he's fast. So, you know, he's coming in, he's still wanting to show he's capable, he's still wanting to show he's worthy of a drive in a world championship team. But, yeah, now he's had three offs, if you like, in as many rallies. The pressure isn't just on from the outside, the pressure's on from inside as well, from himself, because he knows as much as anybody else that he now needs a result, and it does, it makes life more and more difficult. It's a bit of a spiral, and a result for him in Argentina would certainly take a lot of pressure off himself. And and as I said, I don't think it'll matter what Malcolm Wilson says to him. From his own point of view, he knows he needs a result, and he'll try as hard as he can for that.
One story I wanted to follow on as well, we had the excellent Hayden Paddon on, who spoke very frank and very honest about what happened with regards to the drivers getting together on Rally Sweden, and obviously he was one of the ones that said, no, you know, we've got to put the show on here. Now it looks like the FIA and drivers did meet on Rally Mexico. It seems to have come out positive both sides, and I just wonder where can we go next? You know, does there something have to be set in stone almost, or do you think, right, that there's perhaps a gentleman's agreement? I don't know. Is there something needs to be written down? I don't know.
I think this will probably continue. I'm sure that the drivers will probably continue to push to have some formal kind of body. We talked about the parallels in racing, so yeah, I'm sure this is a step in the right direction to have the communication, but I'm sure the drivers will probably continue to want a formal representation.
Jack, on the same page, funnily enough, which is page 12 of your MN this week, there's also a story with regards to Rally Argentina to change route after the FIA raised spectator safety concerns. Apparently, they're on the last chance.
Well, there's a lot of talk about Argentina last year and the safety going on there, and some of the, you know, you'll see some of the pictures. We've got one on the page today of spectators sort of stood on the edge of rocks and stuff like that. It doesn't look the best in these times, really. But Michel Mouton's been out to have a look at the route, and they've had a bit of a reshuffle, and hopefully that can improve the potential problems that we might have with spectators over there. Let's hope it works.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Now, we were hoping, and this may still happen at the moment, we're hoping we're going to try and have Julian Porter on, who is obviously in Mexico, but is also heading out to the opening round of, it wasn't going to be the opening round, but it is now the opening round of the ERC, and we get to the pronunciation of our champion from last year. So, Jack, over to you.
Kajetanovics.
I think that's as good as it gets. Right, can you do any better?
Kajetanovic.
I think Rise is better, actually. Now, this is the rally I flippantly made reference to, I think it was last week, with regards to Mads Osberg is also going to be out. I said perhaps he's going for a suntan, but he's obviously going out there to get a little bit of more tarmac experience in the R5 car, which I assume is not a million miles away from the World Rally Car, right?
Well, it's all relevant, isn't it? Any time on tarmac is beneficial. We know the World Rally Car. We talked to Craig Breen about the differences there recently. So, obviously, a World Rally Car has a lot more torque. It is quicker, but an R5 car is still a four-wheel drive car. It's still a similar driving technique on tarmac, and I'm sure he'll just want to get as much mileage and be as up to speed as he can be when the WRC turns to tarmac.
As we record this, we may well still have Julian with us, but unfortunately we're working with about three different time zones, and he's moving from Mexico over to the Canary Islands. It's a tough old world out Julian Porter lives in, isn't it? I've just realised. But he's moving from Mexico to the Canary Islands, so hopefully we may well get him. But Jack, I wanted to, and this is going to be a story which I know Rye's going to love as well, Arbarth back with an RGT 124 model. Where did this story come from, Jack?
It's from the road shows, the Geneva Motor Show, isn't it? That's it. They released the car out there. They've released the actual road car, I think, didn't they, along with the actual rally car. But I think it's really good we're going to get another RGT, because obviously it's brilliant that we've got the Porsche, but there doesn't seem to be any sort of interest in people. I mean, there was a bit of a talk about an Aston Martin a while ago, wasn't there? But that was a few years ago now, I think. And I think it's nice to have another car in the sector, and hopefully that'll sort of stimulate the entries in the WRC a little bit, if that's what they're planning to do.
Right, I don't know whether you've seen any images of this car yet. It's a funny looking thing, I have to say. I'm looking at a picture of it now. It's the Arbarth returns with the 124 moniker. I don't know whether you've seen anything of it yet, and I don't know whether it's just the colours or whatever, but I don't know whether it's going to be much of a challenge for the RGT Porsche, but again, it's a different brand, and it's a brand which has got steeped, I suppose, in rally history.
Yeah, good to see more another rear-wheel drive car, homologated, firstly. I think the 124 is based on a Mazda MX-5, isn't it?
I wouldn't be surprised. It looks very similar.
I believe it's a partnership, and it's quite closely based on the MX-5 underneath. So, but like I said, good that there's another car, another rear-wheel drive car homologated for rally.
Now, speaking of rear-wheel drive cars, everybody wants to know, we're gonna touch on BRC, because I know Jack's chomping at the bit, but we've also got Ian Campbell coming up at the end of the programme, who's going to be doing any other business with us, so I don't really want to get to BRC. But speaking of rear-wheel drive cars, the GT 86, right? You were one of the men charged with testing this on Thursday before it started the mid-Wales stages, and just tell us a little bit about it.
We just touched on rear-wheel drive. I mean, we've seen quite a lot of images of Toyota Motorsport, TMG's new GT86, been tested. Patrick Snyers drove it in Belgium last year. This was its first proper run on gravel. It had tested on a gravel test track in Germany, but its first proper forestry run, if you like, and its first proper forestry rally at the weekend. So TMG were over with the car to oversee rally prep, looking after it, and to get feedback from the car, really. So obviously, it's an homologated car. It's one of the few rear-wheel drive cars that you can go and do any rally worldwide in. And probably the difference to the RGT 911 that we just talked about is obviously it's not as powerful, but therefore the running costs are a lot cheaper. Good fun car to drive, makes a nice noise, and like I said, it's nice to see something different with it. Unfortunately, Chris Harris had a battery failure on Friday evening in Wales with a car, which is ironic because we did something like 120 kilometres of testing with the car before the rally, and then something simple like a battery failure actually stopped the car on Friday night, which shows how fickle rallying can be. But there was a few other similar issues on Friday night that we'll come to in a little while. But nice to see something completely different out, and let's see, hope we can see it a bit more throughout the championship.
So, Jack, Are we allowed to talk what happened on the last run of the test, right?
you can ask, yeah.
Jack, ask Ryan what happened on the last run of the tests.
I may have heard what happened, but just to make your life a bit easier, Ryan, I'm going to ask anyway. What happened on the last run of the tests?
Well, as you know, whenever you're testing, you never do a last run.
Nope.
And we certainly weren't doing a last run. And then we got to the start of the test stage, and the marshal said, "Right, this is your last run." And it's like, "Oh God, here we go." And I did a Thierry Neuville. It needed a new suspension arm, but I did see the rock, and I did think I'd gone around the rock, but I didn't. I clipped the rock, and it required a new suspension arm. So there we are. That was the last run.
See, I didn't want to ask Jack. I just wanted to use you to ask that question.
I'm a journalist. I'm used to asking all the questions. Give a total answer.
Now, Jack, from your, we're going to talk about how we feel about the BRCSA later in the programme. You were on Mid Wales. Just give us your thoughts on what you experienced.
I think it was a really well-run event. Obviously, we talked about the recce a bit earlier, and there's not actual words that can describe, I think, to people who weren't there, what that recce was actually like. If we say really heavy snow, it's very slippy, lots of cars getting stuck on the recce. I think that really upset a few of the crew's rhythm going into the rally. They were already really nervous about starting the first BRC round for God knows how long. But it was really exciting. It made it really interesting. Great start to the championship. First two stages, both elements of Rally GB in the dark with the added snow. It was just everything that you would want a first round of a championship to be, I thought.
I can assure you that there was no constipated rally drivers waiting to start that rally after that particular recce. I think from all our points of view, and we are going to, as I say, we're going to have Ian Campbell coming up a little bit later on, but my perspective from being a competitor there, it was great to be part of it. I think the rally, you've got to take your hat off to the organisers for being brave, because there was elements on Thursday where Friday, when we were doing the recce, I thought this rally can't run. There's no way it's ever going to run. So the fact that they held fast, yes, it will be fine, it will run. That said, I'm so glad that we had the experience of doing Wales Rally GB on those stages, because we managed to cobble together some notes that we'd had from GB. Again, the amount of respect I've got for those drivers who went out and wrote notes and went as quick as what they could, as quick as what they went. Because whatever notes they would have wrote on the Friday, and I think, Ryan, you could probably comment on this, to write a set of notes one day, to look for braking points and things like that, and plate speed and take cuts, to have it covered in snow and then go back the following day and it's not covered in snow. Just for our listeners, perhaps, who've not been in that position, just explain what it's like.
Well, we've talked about wrecking quite a lot on the show, haven't we? It's a black art in itself. The ability to make pace notes on two runs through a stage when you're doing 30 or 40 miles an hour that will be perfect when you're coming through that same piece of road at 80 or 100 miles an hour it's a very, very difficult skill to learn anyway. So to then throw into the mix snowy conditions where you can't actually see what line you should be on, you can't see if there's maybe rocks or logs or something on the line, it just makes it very, very difficult. And you know, some people are getting stuck, some people are going off the road, and all the time you're trying to make an accurate record of where the road goes. So inherently, it only makes life much more difficult. Some people, I think you were one, Tony, only got one pass over one of the stages, and to literally only get one run over, you've not checked the notes, you could have lefts instead of rights, you could have a fast corner that actually was a bit tighter than you thought. And it certainly makes wrecking much more difficult, and it's already a difficult process.
It genuinely was, and I think, you know, I think it was quite interesting, and I know I flippantly made reference to it at the top of the programme, Jack, that for somebody who's never really been, you know, rallying at that level before, to come out and actually experience a wrecking and how difficult it is, just from your point of view, was it what you thought it was going to be?
No, I think it's something to that you can't really sort of predict what it's going to be like as someone who's uninitiated, if you like. I mean, I know, I understand how a recce works and what the objectives of a recce is, but to actually sit in a car while a recce is being done is a completely different kettle of fish. And I think it made me even more envious of these drivers, and to be stood at the stage end when some of these guys are coming through, you know, Elvin Evans, Frederick Allen and Tom Cave, these guys who've just gone through a stage in 15 odd minutes, and you know, I've driven through that stage on the recce, and I'm thinking in my head, how on earth have they, you know, written notes on this recce, and B, managed to stick to those notes and go that quickly through the stage? It was awe-inspiring, to be honest. I thought, so how quickly some of those guys were going in some of those stages.
Well, we're going to get back to our predictions now. So, who did you predict for the win? Jack?
Elvin Evans.
Ryan?
Yeah, I think we're all Elvin Evans.
I think we were all Elvin. The D-Mac Juniors.
Marion.
And you, Ryan?
Okay, Tony, did you actually get this one right? For once, did you get something right here?
Hell yeah. And I'll even go one better, right? Gus Greensmith, who was my tip, ladies and gentlemen, will be coming up on the programme a little bit later on. And Jack, there's this little special message from Gus at the end of that interview just for you. Not from me.
Brilliant.
Yeah, for you. Gus has left you a little message.
I hope it's positive. Probably isn't,
you'll have to listen.
Gus is a nice lad. I'm sure he wouldn't say anything bad about
him. No.
maybe to my face, but not on the radio.
No, not at all. It's all good fun. So Gus left you a little bit of a message. Now, one driver that I tipped quite comfortably, and he didn't do me wrong, was Matt Edwards. And a lot's been said about Matt's drive as well. Granted, you know, I've heard a few things. He knows those stages very, very well. He's drove those stages. He's won that rally before as well, which is perhaps been missed. But even so, to get that Evo 9 in amongst it, right, you know what it's like to pedal an Evo 9 very, very quickly. Just tell us a little bit about how did he manage to do that?
I mean, it was a fantastic drive. Yeah, he might know the stages, but it's like we've talked about before. There's knowing a road and actually being able to drive at 11 tenths on it. You know, you know bits of the stage. You can't, or at least I'd be surprised if you can drive any of it from memory. Maybe bits of Sweet Lamb and the certain parts you remember. But he still had to drive the stage, and more importantly, he still had to drive the conditions. And he did a fantastic job of that. A Group N car is a lot heavier than the R5 cars he was up against. You've got less power, but he was still setting fantastic stage times. And you know, we talked briefly about Philip Morrow last week. Philip's got a lot of experience of that car, of the British Championship, and you know, Matt was a lot faster than Philip Morrow. So an incredible drive to get what was a brand new car he's just built himself right up into the top 10 in amongst all of R5 cars. So
boys, I'm really, really sorry. Going to have to cut you short. We are running out of time. We're always up against it, aren't we, in this one? So, Jack, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you so much for giving us the headlines. Same time, same place next week.
Yeah, Yeah, no worries. See you next week. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. And Rye, before we go to any other business, we're going to have the wonderful Molly Taylor, who's going to be telling us all about that Subaru Australia program that she's managed to put together. And she, as ever, always great fun. And we're going to have Gus Greensmith talking about his win in the DMAC Junior Trophy on the British Rally Championship and what's going to be coming up for him this year. And we're going to have Martin Brady, who's sitting with a... for those of you who don't know Martin, he's been on our programs in the various guises for the last 5 years, and he's a traveling co-driver who gets about a little bit, but he's doing this Vauxhall, the Opel Adam Championship over in the German Rally Championship with Calvin Beattie, a young Irishman, and he's telling us all about that. And I suppose it harks back to the days of the 106s and the KAs and things like that, so I'll let Martin tell you about that. But sit back, relax, enjoy this bit, and we'll be back with any other business.
This is Absolute Rally Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Hello.
Molly Taylor.
How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good.
That's all right, then. That's all right. You almost sound surprised.
Yeah, we're all good.
That's all right, then. Well, listen, before we go any further, I need to congratulate you. I've just looking at your award, the Peter Brock Medal. Just tell our listeners a little bit about that. What's that all about?
Yeah, so the Peter Brock Award, it's only been running, I'm the fifth winner of the award. So it's basically an award that's been developed to it's not only for to reward driving results, but also someone who I guess is really inspired and lives by what Peter Brock was outside the car, and he was an absolute legend, and one of the biggest, or if not the biggest, motorsport icon in Australia, with a huge influence internationally. And he was, one of those people that, as well as being incredibly successful, was also very generous in the time that he gave back to the sport, and just got a whole lot of people really enthused about motorsport in general. So, yeah, I'm really, really honoured to have been, even, I guess, considered, let alone win the award. It was a big surprise when I found out, and it really means a lot.
Fantastic. Well, they just keep coming, don't they, these awards? They just keep coming.
I don't know about that, but I'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the last time we spoke, we were just going into the final round of the Australian Rally Championship, and we wished you all the best, and we said, let us know you get on, and you didn't.
I never did.
Yeah, so we have to do a bit of Googling, and we found out the reason why. Unfortunately, it didn't quite go according to plan.
Yeah, look, I mean, Eli was awesome competition all year, and he really, we had a chance to win, but it really had to go in our way, and the event started off quite well. We took an early lead, but then. Yeah, it wasn't enough to hold off Eli. He did a fantastic job, and I think our little car was was ready for a bit of a rest after that event. I'm surprised we got through. We had a misfire which we couldn't solve all rally, and then the suspension broke on the second day, and it was everything that
were you driving hard, Molly Taylor?
Just like rallying. Well, I keep saying to the boys that, I didn't actually hit anything when the suspension broke, but no one believes me. But I still stand by that.
They never do. They never do, Mo. They never do. Now, obviously, a little news report popped up the other week, kind of prompted me, because we've not spoke for ages, and genuinely I thought, do you know what, I'd heard you doing some stage end stuff, which we'll talk about in a second. I thought, we must get Molly on, because we need to find out what's going on. And then this little news story broke about the domestic return to rallying for Subaru over in Australia. How exciting is that?
Yeah, it hasn't sunk in yet, not at all. Yeah, incredibly exciting, and I guess it was always the goal from the very beginning to be able to do it as your career. And you know, there's many times where you know it's so unknown. You can work, you know, as hard as you want, but there's not many opportunities. So for it to actually all unfold this way, and for this opportunity to be here on the table, it's yeah, it's what you're always planning for, but it's still a bit of a shock when it comes.
I think, out of everybody, Ryan and I spoke about this story briefly last week, because I asked whether Gem was flying over to return to the silly seat with, of course, Gemma, Ryan's missus, who used to co-drive for you in the BRC back in the day. But unfortunately, apparently, she's a little bit busy with Finlay these days, and she isn't going over to Australia. So who is going to be sitting with you?
Well, Bill Hayes, who sat with me last year, he will be sitting again in the silly seat. So, it was obviously coming back to Australia after being with Seb for a number of years, and he's obviously got the gig with Kevin and Kevin in the Hyundai WRC team. So, when I came back to Australia, I needed to find someone that was local, and Bill has an incredible amount of experience. And so I asked him to come along, and things clicked from the very first rally. So, really happy with how that's working, and happy that he's hasn't had enough of me yet and has agreed to stick around for another year.
Well, I remember Bill's been sat with Alistair McRae for probably 3 or 4, maybe 5 years. Maybe more. I might be off on that, but I remember Bill with Alistair for quite some time.
Yeah, that's correct, in there with the Proton Super 2000s. So, yeah, he's done a lot. And then previous to that, he was actually co-driving for Dean Herridge in the Australian Subaru factory team back when they had the factory team running. So he's, he's been involved with the Subaru family as well for a long time. So it's a great fit.
Wow. So it's come full circle. Now, we always get kind of, it's a Group N car, because we're of that age, but it's now called an NR4 car. Now, have I got this right? Is it the Australian Rally Championship is pretty much almost like open class, isn't it, though? It's kind of very similar to, I suppose, to the Canadian Rally Championship and the American Rally Championship, where kind of anything goes, and you're going to be in pretty much a standard car, production car.
Yeah, more or less. Our regulations, I guess, aren't exactly the same, but follow the same kind of thinking as America. It's, we're open to maxi cars, and, obviously Super 2000s and all those sort of cars, and a bit more freedom, I guess, being all the way over in Australia. We want to encourage as many people as possible to get involved. So, but we're going to stick with the Group N strategy. And, I think, the cars have incredible history, and Les walked in rallying. He'll be building the car. He's had a lot of experience with building Group N cars. So the car's definitely going to be good. And then it will be a case of getting out to the first round and seeing where we stack up.
Now, I'm going to ask you that question, which I'm sure is already in the back of your mind. What's the chances of doing Rally Australia in it?
Well, Rally Australia is the part of our national series as well. So we'll definitely be there, whether we're in the Australian component or the WRC component. We'll be there competing in the Australian series, but I'm not sure which section we'll enter yet. But we'll certainly be there at the event.
Okay. Well, fingers crossed. It'd be great to see you back in the WRC. I know you've been doing the stage end stuff. How are you enjoying that?
Yeah, I loved it. I was really nervous the first couple of times. But, it was a fantastic experience. And just to still be over there and doing something and being involved in some way. And I had the opportunity last year to also do a few rounds as a gravel crew. So, obviously to be driving is always the ultimate, but, next best thing is to still be there in some capacity. You still learn something every time you're out in that environment.
It hasn't done Craig Breen any harm, has it? You know, he was the perennial stage end reporter stroke driver, and look where he's ended up now. So, you know.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Dreams can happen. Exactly. Dreams can happen.
There's a long going debate over who was better at stage ends, and I think, I mean, that debate's closed in my mind, but I don't think it's closed in Craig's mind. I think we'll both still argue about that for a while.
So, I think it's fair to say, I think the last time we spoke, we were talking about, obviously, you returning to Australia after being in Europe for a great number of years. And you were talking about obviously working with sponsors and stuff and getting people more involved, obviously more locally, and it helped you being in Australia. It seems like a very obvious question to ask. Has that decision been proved completely 100% correct now with this news?
Yeah, I believe so. It was a bit of a gamble at the start of last year coming back and doing the domestic championship. And, you know, some people, I guess, said, well, that's, you know, you're taking a step down from, you know, the JWRC and what you were doing. But I actually, you know, think being able to compete back in Australia, because I'd been away for so long, it's very difficult, I guess, to, you know, we're kind of so far away that, you're not competing on home soil in front of your local crowd. So no one really knows how competitive you are. And I think, you know, it was good for me to come back to Australia and prove that. And certainly I think what's happening now is off the back of that. I'd obviously still like to keep the doors open over in Europe, but, as a driver, there's not many, factory seats around in the world. So, to be able to secure something like that is a really big deal for me. I think it was the right thing to do.
Now, we're just about to embark on a new era in the British Rally Championship, which is where you really came to make your name internationally before obviously going into doing ERC and JWRC and things like that. Have you had a little bit of a watchful eye on what's going on the new BRC with all these new R5 cars coming?
Yeah, it's an incredible lineup, and I can't wait to watch what happens. Like, you know, to get a top eight stage time is going to be really difficult. It's been a while since we've seen that kind of thing in the British Championship. So, incredibly excited, and also not just in the outright, the junior categories as well. And there's a number of Aussie guys that are actually coming over to do it as well. So, I think it's this groundswell of support from the young drivers right up to the R5 guys is I think it's fantastic for British rallying, and it looks really, really healthy. I want to give it another go.
There's an old fart and a Fiesta ST as well at the back of the field. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, my favourite.
Oh, thanks, Moll. Oh. Hey, listen, genuinely, as you've just mentioned about the Aussie guys who are coming over to do it, has anybody picked the phone up to you before they came over?
Yeah, look, I've spoken to a couple of the guys, about various things and contacts and some of the stages. So, certainly I think it's one of those things, if I can help with any of my experience, then that's, I'm all up for that. And, I know how difficult it was for me. So if I can help in any way to ease that transition a little bit, that's a good thing. But then there's also so much, you have to learn just by throwing yourself in the deep end and getting the experience. So, I mean, they're all really, really motivated, which is really nice to see, and good for Australia. I think that, we've got some representation over in the British Championship.
Do you feel a bit of a trailblazer? Because I don't think there was many Aussies before you, was there, who did the BRC?
Yeah, I haven't really thought about it like that. But, yeah, I guess, I never thought I was a trendsetter. No one, I don't think anyone, copies what I decide to wear or anything like that. So I've never really thought about people following what I do. I guess, it's shown that, what can come off doing something like that and putting yourself out over in Europe. It'd be interesting to see what happens.
What was was there a definitive question that they all ask you? Was the one question like, what happens with this, or what's this like, or is this stage really as scary as what people make it out to be? Was there any definitive questions, or was it all just 1,000 questions about everything?
Lots of questions about lots of things. I mean, a lot of it really is, the events themselves, but but more so, you know, who do you call to get a recce car, or where do you stay, or...
I can't believe somebody's asking for you for advice on recce cars, Mo, with all due respect.
That's just really great. 106 Peugeot. It's
what was the just for our listeners. I kind of went past Molly a number of times, broken down on a recce once, and I'm sure it was the Clio, wasn't it? Wasn't it the Clio? Did you have a? It was the Clio recce car, yours.
I had a Citroen Berlingo van a few times.
Yeah.
Oh, and the Clio. Yes, I hired a Clio. That wasn't actually my car, okay. But yeah, that. We lost the clutch, and that was interesting. And then we did a stage in second gear the whole way, which was interesting. And there's been a lot of adventures.
Doing a recce on a tow rope is not good. I had to do it for one stage last year. But to be fair, I probably never drove that stage. I didn't drive that stage faster than the rally car, and what I got towed out of there, to be honest with you. But still, there you go.
Well, I rolled in that stage in the rally. That was where I did the roll hair.
Back onto the wheels.
So that was my excuse, but the roll didn't turn out so bad for me. So then I said that I meant to do it.
Yeah, no, it looked good. It was almost the McRae-esque one at X Games, wasn't it? you were already engaged in first gear as you rolled over. How cool's that?
It's one of those things you almost want to see if you can repeat, but I don't think it would be possible. So
no, unless
I think that one's just going in the fluke bucket.
Yeah. When people kind of not in the know, you can kind of go, yeah, of course I meant to do it. But when people in the know, yeah, you can just put it down as a fluke. So take credit anywhere where you can, where nobody's going to question it, is what I'm saying.
Okay, perfect.
Cool. Well, listen, Mol, it's been lovely to catch you up, and we're going to follow you this year, not in a kind of weird way, but we're going to keep an eye on you, and we'd like you to come and talk to us about what's going on in the Australian Rally Championship. Is that a deal? Can we do that?
Yeah, I would love that. We'll make it more regular. Okay. I'll get back to you.
Make sure you do. Listen, Molly, thanks so much for joining us on Absolute Rally, and we'll catch up soon.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
Hello.
Gus.
How are you, right, Tony?
I'm really good. How are you?
Not so bad, not so bad at all.
How was the hangover?
Actually, not bad. I made it alive.
Good man, listen, you deserved it. So welcome back to Absolute Rally, and it's great to have you back on, and thank you for proving that my predictions can be right last week, because I predicted you to win the junior section on the opening round of the British Rally Championship, and sure enough, I think you were fastest in every stage bar one.
Yeah, it was a perfect start to the season. It was what we wanted, what we've worked hard for. So, no, I was really happy about how it went.
Listen, but, I was just about to say, it was a very tricky rally, wasn't it? It wasn't just a rally where you could go out and just drive quickly. Obviously, you did that, but it was such a different rally, to do from the recce and everything else.
Yeah, that was the tricky part, predicting where the snow would be. And then I've never driven on snow. So in stage two, we lost time compared to Sindre and Matthias, and I thought, so I went back and restudied the onboards and found out where I was losing my time, and then sure enough in the morning we were 10 seconds faster, so whatever I did worked.
Yeah, it was, you know, obviously I was there, which we will talk about throughout the programme with different people, but this is about you. One thing I have to say, I genuinely take my hat off to you guys. You went out and really did push on that Saturday night, because that was going to be the game changer, I felt, for everybody. I think, you genuinely can have the best lamp pod, laser lamps, whatever in the world, but just those lines that you had to take, but otherwise you were on snow, were so difficult, weren't they?
Oh yeah, they were tricky. I thought the actual the stage three was the trickiest. The section in the middle where it was just pure snow came out of nowhere over a crest, and I had the biggest moment on the rally there. And I spotted that the surf had changed, so I adapted my driving style to that, and I think that's why I gained my time in that particular stage.
Do you feel now, kind of, you did the DMAC Drive Trophy, obviously, at WRC, and won Rookie of the Year last year. You're driving now. How much different does it feel now from the last time you were in the British Rally Championship? How much more developed do you feel?
Probably the difference is close to 2 seconds a kilometre in terms of speed. just through experience in the car, and then we found another big chunk of time working with David Higgins recently. And it's just, it was never the commitment that was the problem. It was just fine-tuning things, bringing myself back just to understand that these cars don't have a lot of power in the front-wheel drive, so the exit is everything. And that's where I've made the biggest improvement.
Youthful exuberance always lacks patience, and I'm speaking from experience now. I'm 41 years old, so is it patience that you've gained now, just realizing what you do have to do with a small front wheel drive car?
Yeah, it's just one turn, wait, and then put the power on. You don't want to, and you always got to be straight. You can't be coming out the corner sideways, because these cars just can't get the grip like the four wheel drive cars can. So it's always about the exit. And if you're more patient on the entry, you reap the rewards on the exit.
Now tell me, has this whetted the appetite for further outings in the British Rally Championship? Because obviously you are confirmed. You're one of the three Brits that have been confirmed for the DMAT Drive Trophy this year. That's where your destination is. But can we see you more out in the BRC as well?
I'm going to do the Pirelli Rally. It doesn't clash with anything. It's a perfect pre-event test, almost, to the pre-event test for Portugal. It gets me back in the back in mode. So I can't wait for that one.
Alex Chisimo, of course, who's your co-driver. Alex, I've known for a while, and obviously he's friends with my co-driver as well. And we spoke to him at length on Wales Rally GB when he first sat with you, and he was quite giddy at the prospect of doing the BRC. I'm sure he's a man that's possibly nudging you perhaps towards further outings.
Yeah, definitely. He was really impressed with the organisation of the championship and the actual buzz that was behind it. It was amazing. So he was pretty adamant that it would be a great thing to do. So when we were deciding whether we should do or should not do the Pirelli Rally, it came down to the simple fact that it was just, it's great coverage if you get a good result. And even if you don't get a good result, we know the times will be good, so people will notice. And then again, it gets you back in stage mode.
I think that one result, and I mean this with the greatest respect, that one result you got over the weekend is worth more than the championship you won in the old BRC.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. The competition wasn't even near the same level back then as it is now. The level now is fantastic. You've got an actual manufacturer in the junior championship. You've got the majority of the field is European championship drivers. The level of competition has just increased so much. It was great to be on my toes all the way through the rally and actually having to plan my rally around everyone else, because usually you want to run your own rally, but people were changing the pace at different points. So I sort of knew where I'd be quick and knew where I wouldn't be as quick. So I judged my pace, and it just made the whole rally a little bit more difficult for me.
Yeah, I know you've been working quite a bit recently with notes as well. You mentioned you've done some stuff with David Higgins as well leading up to the event, but how much more developed have your notes come from even from this time last year?
The biggest difference in rallying as a package is the pace notes compared to last year. They're so much simpler. They have more of a flow, which was the thing which was slowing me down, especially in places like in Germany when I was allowed to push. They were the things that held me down, because there would always be hesitation, and you can't have that in rallying, not at this level, definitely not at drive DMAC level. So once we've found this flow, which isn't 100% yet, but we're getting much closer to where we need to be. Once that's cemented, yeah, we're going to have a really, really good package.
So now we prepare for the opening round of the DMAC Drive Trophy, obviously WRC level, and obviously the Pirelli. What's the process now? You've got the come down. The adrenaline's now subsided, as has the lack of hangover, which we alluded to at the top. But what's the next few weeks bring for you now? What's happening?
I'm having a week off now after just constant training, no partying, no drinking for 3 months. I think I need to give myself a little bit of a rest, and then straight back at it. Training again, and then I've got about 3 or 4 weeks till the Pirelli, which should be enough time to get me right back on fitness.
Fantastic. Now, you're one of the few people, and I'm sure more and more people are actually doing this now. The DMAC Drive guys are taking their own, getting their own cars as well, because people perhaps don't realise who listens to the programme. You know, we have people all over the world that the DMAC Drive situation is that it is an arrive and drive kind of package, isn't it? You know, you just get yourselves there, you get given your car and everything else. Do you find the fact that now you've got your own Fiesta R2T so much more beneficial now, and the fact that you can just go and sit in it wherever you want, and you can take settings and thought processes and how you want the car into the DMAC Drive Trophy?
Oh, definitely. That's a huge thing for this year, because last year we didn't do any pre-event testing, not even in the old R2. And this year we've got a full schedule planned for a pre-event test, either it be 1 or 2 days, usually with some tuition. It just makes such a big difference, because you're already dialed in to know what the stages are going to be like when you put your foot down. Once the green light comes up on the first stage, you're just ready for it.
With regards to tuition, I find tuition a fascinating thing, and you know, I always say that you're never too old or too young to receive tuition. You know, we use a football analogy. You know, Lionel Messi still has a coach at Barcelona, and he's meant to be the best player in the world. So, are you open and you're susceptible, and you do work with people? Is it do you seek out different types of tuition, or do you just stick with one type of what? You know, do you just stick with David Higgins, for example, or do you talk to other people?
I seek out more than one person, because it was actually Andrew Wheatley who told me you've got to find bits and bobs or take bits of information from different people and put it together to make a better package than they did. So that's what I'm trying to do. But there's certain people like David that I bond with a little bit better than others, and I think he's got a lot of experience, an incredible amount of experience to help me progress.
And Andrew Wheatley, of course, who, again, people don't tend to realise Andrew Wheatley is one of the main men up at M Sport, and all the Fiesta 1 Make Championships kind of stemmed from him, and the fact that he's took so many careers, I think, is sometimes kind of forgotten. And it was good to see him in Newtown this weekend, obviously overseeing all the guys in the Fiestas, I know, obviously, but he's been such a source of information for a number of people, and it's good that you can rely on people like that and talk to them, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it's incredibly important. Andrew's helped me a lot in ever since the first day I went to the BRC media day, before I even got a rally car. You know, he said don't get an R2, get an R1, which I was completely disgusted with, because I wanted a sequential box, but I wasn't allowed it, which was actually the best decision I made in my running, because it gave me a year to have to give myself the extra 30 meters of room for error going into a corner, because you're going that much slower, and it allowed me to develop my driving with less accidents, one, and I also think it actually worked out for the best.
I think it has, and you've also ended up with a cracking little recce car, I notice as well, which is the R1 Fiesta, which you took to your British Junior title back in 2014.
Yeah, it's a great car. It's actually gone now.
Oh, has it?
Me. I was devastated.
I know,
Any day you sell a rally car is a good day.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you've got an R2T sat in the garage waiting to be driven. Yeah,
I can actually walk around in the garage now. I'm not crammed in with rally cars. They've gone.
Listen, mate, I'm going to let you enjoy the rest of your day. It was important because Jack Benyon from Motorsport News and Ryan Champion, my co-host, they pick their own winners. I pick mine. I put my money on you. So thank you. The teas and pies are on then next time I see them. So thank you for allowing me to win that bet.
Yeah, just make sure you remind Jack that number 1 and 2 in the rally were the people he missed.
Yeah, absolutely. I will do, my mate. I will do. Listen, Gus, go and enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks for joining us. And again, massive congratulations on your result.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Take care. Thanks. See you, Gus. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 441904-766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Martin Brady, welcome back to Absolute Rally. It's been a while. How are you keeping?
Tony Simpson. I'm good, thank you. Good to be back.
It is good to be back. Now, we kind of pride ourselves on we don't just cover the world of rallying. We cover the world of rallying almost, not just the World Rally Championship. That kind of made sense in my head. But anyway, the reason why I wanted to get you on, you announced some rather exciting news the other week, and something a little bit different, and it's with regards to this little pocket rocket that seems to be getting more and more popular. Tell me about it.
Yes, it's something that we had on the background burning for quite a while. It's a driver called Calvin Beatty, who I did some BRC stuff with in 2014. I think we were last in the BRC. And he'd taken a year out of rallying to concentrate in college and also working in the family business. We were looking for something to come back in 2016 and did a bit of research, wanted to try and do something different, and found the Opel Adam Cup, which is in Germany. It's run by the German equivalent of, say, the MSA or Motorsport Ireland, their ASN, the ADAC, and they look after it in conjunction with Opel. So it's a work-supported, one-make manufacturer championship that harks back to something like the glory days of, say, the Peugeots or the Cars back in the day that ran in British rallying. So it's along the same lines. It's a manufacturer-supported championship that they build the cars, you buy them from them, they supply them, they contract a company to look after the whole thing. And 16 drivers are invited every year, or accepted, your entry is accepted, and you turn up to Germany, you go rallying, you try and battle against each other in equal cars, and at the end of the year, Opel step up and provide, or certainly they have in the past, they've stepped up and they've provided the winner of the series with a works drive the following year, and their works or two team in the European Championship. Now, the championship itself is, we feel quite economical to enter, given that, okay, we have to travel from Ireland to Germany to do it, but it seemed to be within budget and ticked all the boxes we felt it needed to tick, and Opel really do throw their weight behind the championship. So we thought it was something different to try, and something to at least go and try and be involved in. Obviously, we're going there to try and be as fast as we can and be in the competition and in the mix, but no matter what happens with the results, it's experience, I think, that we won't get anywhere else, and it's something different. It gives us some good stories to tell, I hope, by the end of the season.
Well, you've always got a story to tell, Martin. Now, I'm gathering, and please put me straight on this, because I've heard lots about these little cars, and I've heard quite a bit about this championship as well, obviously, because I'm trying to think. Is it Envel Berkovic that originally, I think, won the original one, was it? Who got the works drive and the R2 and ERC? Is that, have I got that right?
Yeah, you're right there, Tony. He's definitely one of the alumni of the championship, all right. Yeah, I believe he was a winner in the past, and that's what brought him to the attention of the higher-ups, let's say, in Opel, that he progressed on then to the works team and did European Championship and stuff. So, yeah, that's their sort of ladder of opportunity, I think, and that's where he came from, yeah.
So, is it a mixed surface championship, or is it all seal surface? Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, the German championship is a sealed surface championship. Yes, it's tarmac. But that said, we use some link roads. So you have a certain percentage of gravel on every event. I think it was something that was less than 6 kilometres or something in total of this event stage mileage. But those bits are actually quite tricky because you're going across through farmland, through fields. It wouldn't be gravel in the conventional sense that you or I would be used to in stages like Wales or Scotland or that. You're not going through a forest, you're going through farm roads, which are a loose surface sometimes. Well, certainly on this rally, they were mud and muck and soil. So you have those link roads going across. But the tarmac itself is sort of like you would see on the first day of the WRC Germany, the sort of farmland stages where you're going through stuff that has no hedges, but you're in farmland, grass left and right of you. And what to me, now obviously this is our first event in Germany, so we don't know what's typical of German stages. We've a lot to find out yet, but anything we've seen so far is like you would see on WRC Germany. And in fact, WRC Germany is one of the rounds of the championship. It's a double header round, so we'll be doing that round as part of its nation round championship in total. And that's one of the rounds. So,
okay, so tell us about the first round then. What do we know about that?
It was the Saarland Rally, which is in the southwest of Germany. It's just underneath Frankfurt. And it's actually, for people, again, who know, I keep coming back to the WRC Rally, because I guess that's those of us who haven't been in and out of Germany. doing the championship, you know, that don't are not familiar with the German championship, it's the reference point for us all. It's quite near to the BAM holder stages of that rally. It's just underneath that. And I think it was in 2001, the town that the rally was based in, St. Wendel, was actually used as the town stage or the spectator stage of WRC Germany. So it's that's how close it is to that region. But it's actually, by dint of that, it's close-ish to, say, the Luxembourg border. So that's the corner that you're in. Just before the rally, they were hit, of course, as other rallies last weekend were hit by quite a heavy snowstorm. So the first and third stage of the rally, the Friday night leg, were cancelled, which we were a little bit disappointed about because that was one stage that was previous to other years. So we'd seen bits of that on YouTube and so on and had a felt that we had a bit of a feel for the first stage and what it was going to be like. And if anything, it was the stage that I thought was the most like what we would be used to in Ireland, because it was a little bit wider, a little bit more asphalt, you know, black asphalt like we would be used to. But unfortunately, because of the snow, we lost that and we only could do the town stage, which in itself actually was a long enough stage. It was 4.5 Ks, so it's not your typical spectator stage. They definitely, okay, they bring you around some loops where you do the, in certain sections of the stage more than once, but it's, as town stages go, it was very well set up and, you know, typical German efficiency. Everything ran perfectly. It was, as you know, I would say before the rally, you would say, I don't want to start our first event, our first stage mile on a spectator stage, but because this one was so good, it was actually fine. It was a good stage to go rallying on and get your teeth into. But then on the second day, on the Saturday, when we went back out into the stages, the temperature had risen quite a lot and most, but not all, of the snow had gone. But with that, it brings still a little bit of ice here and there, but where it's thawing, the roads were just streamed in water, a lot of muck coming out onto the road, and became more like, I would say, a gravel rally than a tarmac rally in a lot of places. So it was a rally for survival, I think, at that stage, because, you know, trying to get used to a new car in those conditions, when you want to stay on the road and get points, which points make prizes, especially in one-make championships, that's what we had to do. So we just sort of dug our heels in and tried to stay on the road, which thankfully we managed when others didn't. And that's all part of it, isn't it? You know, first to finish. For to finish first you have to finish.
Absolutely. So how good are these little cars then?
Excellent. Yeah, excellent. And I say that not just trying to be loyal to Opel, who have put this championship on for us, but the cars are built by a team called Holzer, and I believe their DNA stretches right back to the days of the, you know, the big German touring car championships, the super touring ones.
Yeah, DTM. And
one of the main engineers in that team had some great, but perhaps not for publication, stories about the glory days of that and the budgets that they spent in it, and when they worked with Keke Rosberg. So that team, you know, they have a history, they have a pedigree that's undeniable, and they, you know, they're building a small little car that's the opposite end of the spectrum of some of the things they've done before, but it's just a proper little car. Everything in it is, again, I keep coming back to German efficiency, you know, everything. It's amazing to get into. For me, it was unusual. It's not amazing to get into a rally car where you look at the odometer on it that still works, you know, a little digital odometer, and you see that the first time we get into the car, it's done something like 16 kilometers. So it is essentially a new car. And it's even got, for a rally car, it's got that showroom smell in it. And everything is, falls to hand where it should. It's just tight, proper, strong, well-engineered car that actually goes like stink. You know, it's a really good car. It's mighty. It just it's only a 1.6, just over 140 brake horsepower. So it's not quite the full R2 package, but it's built around what the R2 car is. So there's only some differences in, like, it has the same box and the same suspension and just slightly smaller brakes. So it has that backbone of what the R2 car is, and that in its own right is a very good and competitive car. So this is, it would be insulting to call it the little brother of the R2. It's perhaps the slightly smaller twin, shall we say. So it just works. Everything in it works, and it handles fantastic. It's just, I think that's where the strongest part of it is. And also, for a car that's that low on horsepower, you know, I suppose it's only a number, but on paper, you think, you know, this car hasn't got a lot of horsepower. It's got a hell of a lot of torque. It's gutsy. And, you know, you can run some small hairpins with a little bit of an uphill thing. And it grips and it goes and the torque pulls it up the hill. So, yeah, very impressed by it now. Pleasantly surprised I was the first couple of miles I got in the car.
Good man. So, results-wise, where do we end up?
Results-wise, we got fifth. We spent the first couple of the rally, of course, with a couple of stages. We were a little bit like a Zanussi washing machine. We had we were on a bit of a spin cycle. Every stage we had a bit of a spin. But, you know, we dialed that out, literally, and by the time we got to, say, the fourth stage, we were starting to get a handle of both the conditions and the car, and we went a little bit faster. Then we had a bit of a moment coming down. What was different, this rally, what it was like, you know, when you go to Belgium or these places and you see everybody cuts like crazy and you pull mud onto the road.
Yep.
Well, obviously this was happening and that was amplified by the fact that the ditches were wet and muddy, so you're pulling more mud onto the road. But the thing we found different about this rally was that not everywhere people were cutting and there was no consistency in where the mud was on the road. So we just got caught out on this fourth gear corner and we had a big sideways moment down the road. I kept my head down and let Calvin do his thing to try and regather it. But the thought did occur to me, unusually, at the other side of the road where we were, there was a motorway. So we went out through that hedge. People on the German Autobahn were going to see a little Opel Adam with two Irish guys in the middle of the Autobahn. It was unusual now. Having said that, I exaggerate slightly for dramatic effect, of course. It was no issue. We didn't go off. We gathered ourselves up. And as I said, we felt like we were getting a handle on the car. We came into the night stages and we were just 3 points something behind an Italian guy. His name, I'm not sure I can pronounce properly, but I believe it's Sartor. And he's quite a bit of experience under his belt in the Italian Championship in an Opel Adam or two itself and other bits and pieces. So we set him as a bit of a target. We were 3.6 down on him, and two stages later, we came out 11.1 up on him. So we were happy with that. It got us fifth, which is 16 points on the board. Winner gets 30, so we're sort of halfway behind the winner already, but at least we have points on the board. You know, it's not a zero. It's not a retirement.
No.
And it's something. And I know myself from things like Evo Challenge and R2 and ST Fiesta Cups back in the day that there's, you know, by the end of that season, when you come into the last round, you're better off having 16 points in your pocket than regretting the 16 points that you threw away somewhere else. So for us, we ticked all our boxes. Okay, it would be nice to be further up, closer to the podium or on the podium, but, you know, you've got to take a positive from where we were. And to be fair, there's a Finnish guy that turned up, and in his first rally in it, he was actually our teammate. We're run by a German team on the ground, and he came and was quite a bit faster than some of the Germans who have been doing the championship for a couple of years. So it just goes to show that you know, the championship order has been shook up this season, definitely compared to how it was in other seasons. And we hope as the season goes on to be in the middle of that and you know, featuring a bit more.
Fantastic. Listen, Martin, as ever, a gentleman, never short of a word, but always great detail and always good fun to have on the programme.
Thanks for talking to me, Tony. Appreciate it. And always a pleasure.
You're listening to Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. It's so good that you're still with us. I hope you enjoyed Molly Taylor. I hope you enjoyed Gus Greensmith. And I hope you enjoyed Martin Brady. Never a man short of a word or two. And equally, never a man short of a word or two is Ian Scunner Campbell, Championship Manager of the British Rally Championship. Probably just coming down now from the adrenaline rush last weekend. Welcome back to Absolute Rally, mate.
Hi, hello. It was good to see you on the... When was it? Sunday?
It was. People will start talking about us. I assume the adrenaline now is gone and we're just now getting ready for the Circuit of Ireland. Or are you still riding on that high?
I am working away in the Circuit of Ireland last night and today, which is as good. I mean, the entry for that is looking superb. And very, very full. Bobby's got a lot of numbers and a lot of guys coming, so that's excellent. Got to admit that when I got home yesterday, I was knackered. I think it's the politest term I can use from after the Mid Wales, but it was a great weekend. It was very busy. There was a lot of things going on, and probably the best thing was that the event did not go to script. Nobody said that Elfin should be getting challenged as hard as he was getting challenged over the weekend. Nobody said that a Twingo should arrive from Norway and go just as fast as it did through the Welsh Forest and really give the juniors a scare as well. And then I'm still blown away when we look at that photograph of all the registered competitors on the stage, and you just see everybody together in one place.
Apart from
one or two.
It just looks
incredible. But we will get your photograph taken at other events coming up, and you will star on our profile section of the website.
Now, I'm going to have to pick you up on a couple of things that you just mentioned. One man that did allude to the fact, and we're using the word allude quite a lot in this podcast, I've just realised, was Ryan Champion. Ryan was quite adamant that, yes, Elvin was going to be there, but we'd already kind of doff our caps to Arlen, and we'd already, and Ryan had already said this with regards to the Twingo, that it's such a leveler on gravel, a driver can perhaps get a lot more out of a level playing field on gravel in an R2 Twingo over perhaps some of the Fiestas and things like that. So Ryan Champion was pretty much spot on, I have to say.
Yet again,
right, go on, mate.
No, it's just exactly what I said, you know. The Twingo
was right.
I wouldn't put it as bluntly as that, but no, that's the nice thing about gravel rallying, isn't it? And not just gravel rallying, when you've got conditions like the weekend, you've got real unpredictables in there, and it comes down to driving, doesn't it, at the end of the day. It's the fastest man over the terrain, and the equipment maybe isn't quite so crucial as it might be otherwise. And I do think that we see that on gravel. A good driver can mix it up maybe a little bit more than on tarmac, where the performance of the car really comes to the fore.
Now,
yeah, and you know, and the conditions on Friday for the recce were just horrendous. I don't know what relevance the notes the guys had, from what they made on Friday to come up to what it was on Saturday, Sunday. They obviously just, you know, grabbed hold of the neck of these cars and just wrung them as hard as they could. And what you were saying was just conditions that just kept changing all the time.
I can vouch for that, by the way.
You can. Yeah, everybody you spoke to was saying, you know, you'd go into a corner and you would go around it and go, there was an awful lot more grip there than I thought there was, and then you hit the next one and it was like, oh, wait a minute, there was no grip there whatsoever.
I think from definitely from our point of view, and I'd never wish this on anybody, but certainly being the fact that we were seeded so far back, we had a lot of people finding the holes in the stages, shall we say, because there was a lot of people that did have issues that were running in front of us that you could just see, you know, even some of the lines and stuff like that, especially some of the braking lines. As soon as you see those, you knew what had gone on before you, and sometimes there were still cars there, and sometimes obviously they drove away, but it definitely did help. But I've done nearly 20 years of rallying, and I have never experienced a rally like we experienced at the weekend.
From Friday to Saturday to Sunday, the conditions just kept changing. From there, and you could see that on Friday night when we had our welcome reception. You could see everybody with the eyes or size of saucers that were telling you of what had gone on at recce. And then Saturday night when they came back in after the two stages in the dark. But then it seemed to be a great way to start the championship. You were going through Sweet Lamb on Saturday night in the dark, and the spectators' tales that you were getting was the atmosphere was fantastic in there. And it got it going, and you could, just speaking to the crews at the start line, you could get the anticipation. Everybody was completely wound up to go and set their stall out early on, and so no, it was a good weekend of competition.
Now we kind of did our runners and riders last week, and Jack Bennion, of course, from MN, always starts the program with us these days, and we kind of went through our runners and riders, and Not that we're claiming any kind of credit, but as I say, we kind of pretty much predicted where everybody was going to be, but I think there was a few shocks, and what I mean is by that, I think Frederick Arlen and Elvin perhaps were the standout two, obviously first and second, but I think also showed the difference between the up and coming guys and perhaps already professional drivers.
Tom Cave and Bogey were having a good battle, and both, Tom had given himself an enormous fright 2 weeks beforehand. David was trying out a new car. Ewan Thorburn had his car ready and getting it to Mid Wales. So he had a lot of things to change going right through. But their pace was all, they were all in amongst each other. So there's good competition to come from the three of them when they start getting used to it and going from that point of view. Marty McCormack didn't even make it to the start, so we don't even know what Marty's going to come out with when he starts coming out to the next rounds. And then with other guys who are just still completely unknown to us. Robert Woodside had a bite on Saturday night. Neil Simpson had just the most awful night on Saturday night. We've still got to see the pace from these guys the rounds to come.
Right. I don't know. Obviously, you were watching what was going on from afar, albeit via a laptop and stuff like that. But were you picking up on what was going on from certainly, because obviously we were in it, both Ian and I were kind of in it in our own ways. Obviously, we were in a car and Ian was running his championship.
Yeah,
were
you getting in the corner having tonics?
I did notice that there was a large quantity of tonics on your desk, but I wasn't going to mention it. But Ryan, were you picking up on this stuff as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I was looking at the stage times as soon as they were coming through. I was getting into trouble for looking at my phone for the whole of Saturday evening, I was updating it constantly. And funnily enough, what Ian just touched on, three drivers whose results I was looking for, couldn't see them. Marty McCormack, I think he's diff-filled on the way to the pre-start, which we talk about the fickle nature of rallying. We talked about Chris Harris's car, with its battery failure after 100 kilometres of testing. Marty McCormack never even made it to the start. Neil Simpson got 400 metres past the start before a blow-off valve on his Skoda failed, and Robert Woodside didn't get much further either before he had an electrical failure. And, these are top cars run by professional teams, and it just shows that sometimes, no matter how well prepared you are for a rally, you need a bit of luck on your side.
Exactly. And when you speak to the teams, all of the parts that failed, none of them were items that you could life if you like, that you knew you needed to replace at a specific time. It was a law of sod, and it managed to come out and really give them a kicking, which is just not good at all. That's the way that it goes, and it's one of these things with a championship that we now go to the next round, and we know that we've got these three guys whose pace we just have no idea what it's going to be like, and it's going to be interesting to see what comes from it.
With regards to what we all seen, and I think there's always going to be lessons, there's always going to be things that we can learn from the opening round. From a championship manager's point of view, what have you learned?
From a very personal point of view, it's the first event I've ever been involved in that I've got no influence over the event, because I've always been on the organising side, and I found that particularly difficult from a personal point of view for a while, just to leave the running of the event alone. But from a championship point of view, we feel that we've had a good start, but we have got a list of notes that is no real that we need to get stuck into, and there's lots of presence that we can learn from there. It was hard as well at the event at the weekend because of the spread out nature of the service area, to know exactly what it's going to be like for the competitors at the upcoming rounds when we have a more traditional service park. And learn to what we can do in these sort of areas from that perspective. But what was the things that we learnt the best or the most was that we've got 56 registered crews, which is more than we anticipated when we started this thing back 22 months ago. The decision was made to stop in BRC for 2015. So our big worries were that maybe nobody was wanting to come out to play and nobody wanted to come to the British Rally Championship. Now we've got this 56 crews, which have given it close an awful lot of people to keep happy, an awful lot of people to keep enthused and to keep in as part of the championship, to ensure that we can take them all the way to the Manx in September and into 2017. And that's probably going to be the biggest challenge for the whole year.
I think that's a very, very nice way for us to finish off bending your ear as well.
Not at all. I'm looking forward to seeing as many as possible over the circuit. And then I think you're back out in Pirelli. Is that your next one?
Yeah, we'll be back out on the Pirelli. I must admit, really looking forward to the format. Brian Kilhorn was with us, obviously, on the recce. He was leading us round on the recce, and he took his chance to sell his rally, and we had it scheduled anyway. And I must admit, the format that has come about, it's tough when you're back in work on the Monday, and you know, obviously we're an amateur crew and stuff like that, so from our point of view it's actually quite tough. But I must admit, you know, the Saturday evening certainly did add something very, very nice, and very, very there was a bit of spice to it. I was really, really nervous going into the Saturday night stage. I'd not driven the car properly. We chuck it down briefly on the Wednesday, but I'd not driven it since GB. So to go into, you know, 16 miles in Hafren and Sweet Lamb in the dark as your first proper stage was definitely one that I wasn't, I wouldn't have chose as an easy way back into driving the car. But no, it was, it definitely felt like you were doing something a little bit special, I must admit, and that's, we all need to feel that way. And I think the goodwill that you've got around the championship is phenomenal at the moment, and long may it continue.
I think that's just summed up completely, Tony. We do have a lot of goodwill at the moment. We've got to keep that and ensure that we can do it from there. We've got to make it special for everybody, so we will try our best. I'm sure we will maybe not get it right every time, but as long as we learn from it, and the buzz that's going about before the first round was enormous, and certainly the feeling I've got yesterday and today is that's still there, and everybody's looking forward to the next one in 30 days' time.
Fantastic. Listen, we'll catch up with you a little bit before then. Perhaps we'll do a little bit of a preview of the Circuit of Ireland. And Ian Campbell, well done. One down, six to go.
Thank you. Speak to you later on, guys.
Speak to you soon. Man. Take care.
Thanks. Cheers.
And that was Ian Campbell. Now, we come to any other business. Now, a couple of things I wanted to catch up on right before you do your any other business. We mentioned it before as well, was the 29 tyres used by Danny Sordo on Rally Mexico, and he picked up a 2-minute penalty for that. How does that happen?
I guess a simple oversight. We ironically, we saw it for those that are into Formula One as well. I mean, Williams managed to fit three of one and one of the other in Formula One. You know, it happens, unfortunately. There's a lot of tyres around the service area. If you imagine Hyundai have got three cars there, they've got dozens of tyres around the place. It shouldn't happen, but there's been a procedural error somewhere, and he's had one extra tyre. And he happened to be, 1 minute 58 seconds in front of Mats Osberg, I think. And the organisers saw fit to give him a 2-minute penalty. So, it took Hyundai's podium away. So I'm sure they'd be, you know, quite annoyed by that. But, it wasn't a big advantage, but nonetheless, it was something that shouldn't have happened, and they've been penalised accordingly.
I don't remember it happening in certainly in WRC. I was struggling to recall one, which is why I wanted to. If anyone was going to recall it, it was either probably going to be you or Jules.
Well, let's look at, you know, Sebastian Loeb lost his first Monte Carlo win because Citroën put the car into Parc Fermé on the wrong set of tyres, and he was penalised, and he lost his first Monte win. Mike Harris, a well-known British scrutineer, picked it up, and Loeb was penalised and finished second. So, you know, it has happened, and that was probably a lot harder thing to take, although Loeb went on to reasonable things after that.
I think he did all right, didn't he? I think he did all right, all things considered. Now, speaking of Loeb, and again, we are absolute rally, but... We didn't make reference to it last week. We kind of flippantly mentioned it when Ryan was going through, I think, some of the headlines, but we didn't mention that Sebastian Loeb would come back to a full programme driving, albeit a rallycross car. Was that a surprise?
Well, he's now obviously a Peugeot driver. He's moved from Citroën to Peugeot, obviously all under the same umbrella, the same company, and we knew he's now a Peugeot driver, having done Dakar. There was rumours of this rallycross program now that his World Touring Car program came to an end. So I don't know if it was a big surprise, but it's certainly great to see. We know that the World Rallycross Championship is an exciting place to be at the minute. It's certainly expanding very, very quickly, and obviously Loeb's addition will just increase that, because he's a very, very professional man in everything he does, and it may be that he goes into that, looks at things a little bit different, and other people have to learn from him. He won't find it easy. He's not going to go in there and dominate, because it's too competitive for that, but I'm sure we will see wins from him.
it kind of brings me on to my other piece of any other business, and this is not obviously massive respect for Sebastian Loeb, but do we relate more to drivers? And now Sebastian Loeb to me doesn't fall into this category. I felt he was, manufactured would be the wrong word, but he was kind of brought up through that Citroen ladder, if you like. But he never came across as a fan. And I may be wrong with this, you know, he's a very private guy and everything else, but do we, and listeners of Absolute Rally, please tweet us in on this or send us a message on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Absolute Rally. Do we relate more to drivers that come across as fans? Examples, Craig Breen is an obvious one. We always make reference to very much an aficionado of facts and figures and everything else. Loves it in every sense of the word. Chris Meek, I think, almost falls into that category as well. Hayden Padden, of course. You know, we had Hayden on the other week. He comes across very much as a fan as well. And I just wonder whether rally fans have more of an affinity to those types of drivers, right?
Yeah, I think it's about personality, isn't it? It's about people showing their personality. And if you go back to Loeb as an example, Loeb was a very private person. He didn't show much in the way of affection. He was quite introvert, I guess, as a character. And Ogier, you know, Ogier is another one who's quite interesting because from the outside, he's very domineering in terms of the championship. He's not maybe a very exciting character. Yet for those people who've seen him interviewed in person, so I mean, those people who've been in a room when he's been interviewed, he's actually quite captivating. You know, he's a real character. He loves the sport. He's very open and honest. But his character doesn't come across like that on TV. And I think it's probably just down to how those characters are portrayed, isn't it? You know, you look at maybe Kimi Raikkonen. Kimi Raikkonen doesn't show much of his character, but people love that about him. So I think we're like characters. We're like an edge to a character, don't we?
I think so. Now, I've done my any other business. What's yours this week, Ryan Champion?
Well, mine is linked to something we've talked about already, the Circuit of Ireland, and one of the stories that we'll see in this week's I've got to be careful not to say motoring news because I'm still old, but motorsport news is about the Circuit of Ireland, and it was the fact that Craig Breen would like the opportunity to do the Circuit of Ireland. Whether that'll happen or not, we'll have to wait and see. It was certainly fantastic to see him defending his Circuit of Ireland win, but I think it also opens up, you know, quite an interesting debate about who will be the front runners on the circuit, and we'll come to that in a couple of weeks. But if Craig could add his name to the mix, that would be pretty exciting.
There you go. I missed that. I wanted to ask Jack about that, but we unfortunately ran out of time, as we always do on Absolute Rally. By the time I do the edit on this, it will probably be about an hour and a half, this one. And I always said, once we got over an hour and a half, we would go to two episodes. So now I've tried to condense it down as much as possible. But genuinely, let us know what your thoughts were on that one, on our any other business. The one with regards to whether we do kind of attach ourselves more to drivers that do have an affinity and do talk about their childhood, perhaps following a particular driver or a particular love of a car or whatever it may be. I'd just be interested to know. Just put it out there. Again, you can tweet us at @absolute_rally, or you can drop us a line, as you know, on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/absolute rally. So that is the end of this week's Absolute Rally, and thank you so much for downloading us, and we do appreciate it. Again, spread the love, tell your friends. We do this for nothing. It is getting harder to do this for nothing, by the way, folks. So if anybody can come in and get involved, maybe use us for a little bit of marketing or whatever it may be, it would really, really be appreciated. Anyway, right, same time, same place next week.
I'll be here.
Look forward to catching up with you then. Have a good week, mate.
Cheers, thank you.